Hello and welcome to the Impact Podcast from us at Impact Wales. We're Finn and Jane and every week we'll be bringing you lots of discussion, comments and opinion on everything research and education. We'll be talking professional learning, what's happening in the education world and everything in between to help you make a difference in your school.
Hello Jane.
Hello Finn, here we are in episode, I think we've worked this out as about 81, but we've lost sort of track a little bit, haven't we?
I've got it listed at the top as 81B.
Yeah, but that's not including all the specials we've done as well.
No. I think it is around about 81, so yeah, quite a few. And we're recording this on Monday morning, straight after the Jubilee weekend. So we're both a little tired, shall we say.
Yeah, not from Jubilee celebrations then.
No.
That's so funny that, isn't it?
Just a little insight into my life. I spent the weekend watching the Ultimate Strongman competition, Strongman for the UK competition in Milton Keynes.
Why not?
Which was really exciting.
And I spent the weekend painting the living room.
So
there we go.
I have to say, Milton Keynes, very strange place. Yeah. I hope nobody's listening from there. But yeah. Okay, so what are we talking about today?
Well, I think it's something that we keep coming back to, that we're talking about well-being.
Yes.
And well-being as related to the profession.
Mm.
And I think where we are, and I think we all needed that week last week, from school, even though there are lots of people that, you know, I've had emails flinging back and forth, and I've been working as well, doing other contracts. But I think you just needed that respite, that step away from school, was, I think, this last 6-7 weeks to get through before your summer holiday start. Mm.
Yeah, but I think everybody did need that break and did need that opportunity to recharge. Hopefully people are back in school this week, feeling a little bit rested, feeling like they've had a break. But what we're going to talk about today is we want to talk about why we've chosen this theme for this half terms podcasts, teacher and head teacher wellbeing, teacher and leader wellbeing, because I've actually been reading quite a few things on COVID and how it's not entirely gone away. I'm just thinking about, thank goodness, is it over now?
It's not, because, you know, we still know people that are catching COVID.
But you know, we've come back to this idea of normality, and who would have predicted that we would come back to a European war and, you know, cost of living crisis and the fuel crisis. It's all a bit much, really.
Are Wales in the World Cup?
There we go, let's
have a little bit of cheer.
But what we want to explore today is why we feel this idea of well-being is so crucial at the moment, because of what we've all been through, this collective trauma, that this is not something that can be just dealt with in a couple of policy items and then moved on. This is going to be with us probably for decades. It's something that is of, you know, enormous importance. But
I think
for
it's one of
learning.
I think it's one of those words though that's bandied around, or, you know, well-being.
Yeah.
It's such an umbrella term for what goes on underneath. And I think, oh, we're doing this to address well-being, we're doing that to address well-being. But, you know, how much are we actually looking at the root of everything that's going on, and how much are we addressing that and prioritising?
Right.
That's really what we want to
talk about. I think we've all struggled. We've all struggled, not just with managing the impact of COVID. I mean, we have struggled in terms of managing the impact of COVID on our business. You know, looking back to March 2020, I know I've said this before, but there was a point, and there have been multiple points, when we genuinely thought that we weren't going to have a business to come back to. Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. But, you know, there's life issues as well. You know, we've both had, anybody, our long-term listeners to the podcast will recognise that, you know, we've had stuff going on in our private lives as well, which has been really, really difficult. And if that's happening to us, and we're not actually, you know, teaching, leading in schools, then it's bound to be happening to other people as well. And I think the focus for us is we care. We care about you, our listeners. We also care about the children in schools. We care about the future. And we feel that this is just so important that it can't be something that we just deal with in one podcast and move on. This is something that we want to come back to again over this half term for a start. It's probably something that we're going to come back to over the years, but are we going to be doing this for years?
but we've also lined up a couple of really interesting people to speak to on further podcasts coming out this term. And I know we've got a really good one coming out next week that we've already recorded.
Yes.
And I think just to have this focus and this theme, but looking at well-being for us as a profession from a different perspective, I think it's been really useful for us
yes,
to understand that there's more going on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think the realities of working in a school just at the moment, and specifically in Wales as well, working in a school in Wales as a teacher or a head teacher, you know, we've got an additional layer on top of everything else, which is the curriculum reform. There's this idea, though, at the moment, that certainly during COVID, let's take it back to during COVID, that the expectation was, most definitely in the first few weeks and months, was that teachers and head teachers were going above and beyond. They were, you were, our listeners, working very long hours, coming in when your own children were, you know, putting yourself in danger's way in order to do your job. You know, it was a frontline, it was a frontline profession like never before. Yeah. And the idea that the work was never done, that you were, but that teachers were putting their own needs last. Yeah.
I've heard lots of comments from colleagues and from teachers and listeners about that they've put the needs of the children they teach above the needs of their children at home. And I think it's recognizing that, and you know, it does have a profound effect on you.
It does, absolutely. And if you know, if you're one of those teachers who is going into a situation where you know that they're, you know, COVID is an issue, and that you've got colleagues who have been off with COVID or being seriously ill with COVID, or family members who may have, you know, contracted COVID and really suffered with it, or God forbid, even died with it, it has changed the role of the profession in that I don't think ever before teachers were considered frontline staff.
No.
That's a new concept. And I think that, like you say, that is a profound change. And you know, is education generally a safe place for teachers? Certainly during COVID, it wasn't a safe place for teachers in the same way that the world wasn't a safe place. But teachers were going above and beyond, working harder and faster and in new ways.
And finding it very difficult to say, no, I'm not going to put myself in that position.
Yeah.
Because of the professional
way
that we are.
Certainly during COVID, the trend was that teachers weren't saying no because they didn't feel they could.
No.
And in the same way that the NHS wasn't saying no. And that was happening during COVID, but I think that feeling has actually hung over to now.
Yeah.
Is that there is this expectation of, and we've heard the minister say it.
Yeah, that you stepped up.
You've stepped up. You've shown what you can do during a global emergency. So why can't you do that more often?
It's very difficult once you've said yes to suddenly backtrack then and say, no, I'm not going to do that anymore.
And I think we need to recognise that there is a difference between being in the midst of a global pandemic and needing to do as much as you can to keep learning going, to the aftermath of that global pandemic and being very low on emotional and physical and psychological resources yourself, and needing to say no at that point in order to safeguard your own well-being.
Yeah. There has to come a point where you have to put your own needs first,
because in order to address the needs of I'm sure we've all been there as teachers, standing in front of the class feeling under the weather for whatever reason, whether that's an emotional reason or whether it's a physical reason, knowing that literally all you're doing is standing, you're being a body in front of that class because you just haven't got the capacity to do anything more than that.
Yeah.
That's not what we want.
No, you don't, you know, you see you when you
no,
when you're like that.
No. So there's a, I think, a tiredness in the profession that is above and beyond what's ever been there before. Yeah. I've noticed in the press there's been a lot of reports about how the tiredness in the NHS is actually causing problems for care.
Yeah.
That you've got, you know, that doctors aren't safe because they're so tired, or that the nursing, the caring, there's this compassion, what's they call it? Fatigue, compassion fatigue. And I think that there's often a lack of understanding or a lack of recognition that what happens in schools is preparing the next generation for the future.
Mm.
And if there is a similar, and we expect there is a similar compassion fatigue and emotional tiredness and an inability to, well, not an inability, there's a lack of capacity.
But it's not even in particular age groups or responsibilities within the school. It seems to be right through the profession, from early career teachers right through to those who've been the stalwarts of the school, who've been there
and
for years.
Head teachers. Particularly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that just as COVID-19 impacted on learners inequitably on an unequal way, it also impacted on different people within the system in a different way. Yeah. No, head teachers, the pressure of being at the top and having to make decisions and do the things that maybe other people couldn't do or weren't in a position to do, or to cut, you know, to carry the slack, or just to be the person where the buck stops. That is a really difficult thing. And I think that trope that's out there, you know, this business as usual, we're not saying business as usual now, but we are still carrying on with that trope. I think that's really, really problematic for head teachers.
We're in a completely different place.
Yeah, we are. And I know that the some of the pressures for head teachers are that they need to always be improving. They need to, you know, they've got this burden of practical tasks that only they can do, or that they need to delegate, and that still takes time. It's a highly intense, hot environment where things just happen. I mean, the number of meetings that we've had and said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm 10 minutes late, you know, stuff happened. It is really, really hard.
The danger as well, we've got these 6 weeks here in Wales left to get to the end of term. Mm. I know as a profession, people will hang on until end of term.
Yeah.
And then, collapse. You know, is that masking really what's going on underneath?
Yeah.
You know, you can't just mask and carry on when, you know, things are beginning to crumble and wellbeing has to be at the forefront.
So what we wanted to do today, and that is just a preamble.
I know, we're not having a whinge today.
No, we're not.
We're trying to make sense of...
We're carrying out an analysis of what's going on in Wales particularly, but we're sure this is also reflected in other countries. We're carrying out an analysis of the intentions of government to address the wellbeing crisis amongst head teachers particularly, but I think this is indicative of an approach that's taking place across government. And I think that, bear with us, because we're going to look at one piece of research in particular that we think reflects the way in which Welsh government is approaching problem solving. So problem solving, particularly for policy. So they're saying, right, okay, Welsh government, we've got a problem here. So we know that there's a problem with retention and recruitment of head teachers, but we also know that there's a problem with wellbeing. So we're going to look at Welsh government's approach to this, Welsh government's procedure, as a kind of indicative of a trend that we're seeing more and more within Welsh government, to this kind of creating policy to solve problems,
and explore a little bit as well what their thinking is in what the solutions are.
Okay, so we've got, we're kind of setting the scene here. We've got Welsh government who've set out a national strategy for educational research and inquiry, so the NSERE, and they've said that they want there to be a much closer link between research capacity in Wales and policy. So we got Welsh government quite clearly stating they want educational research to influence policy. And the kind of the inference from that is that they want policy based on the best evidence. Mm. They want the best bets identified by research as helping them make decisions about policy. So doing, in quote unquote, the right thing, which is
great. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And just as a kind of introduction to this, we had the school day extension trial.
That was back in the start of spring term, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So the original focus for the extension of the school day and the change of the school year was on raising standards for the disadvantaged. That was a key element of it. And they wanted to do that in line with the research. So what the research tells you on extending the school day is that from research around the world, and obviously what the research says is, you know, these are within context.
I think we've done a podcast on this as well.
We have. So yeah, if you want to have a look and go back and have a look at that one, that would work. But it basically says that if it's the usual teachers extending the curriculum in those extensions of the school day, so doing more of the quality stuff that goes on during the day, then you're going to raise standards. If you're doing things like enrichment, it doesn't tend to have much of an impact.
It's a different thing, isn't it?
It is a different thing, absolutely. And what's really interesting is originally this extension of the school day was very much billed as enrichment activities plus normal learning carrying on. But it's now being talked about. There was a written statement out on the 27th of May, the 26th of May, I think it was.
Conveniently just before half term.
Just before half term, yeah. And it's now talking about the additional enrichment activities trial. So it's now been billed as a slightly different thing.
So the learning aspect is gone. Sort of gone.
Not sort of gone.
Not sort of gone. Well, it's gone. It's not mentioned.
It's gone. It's not mentioned at all. So whilst that was actually based on research, it seems to be the extension of the school day is that there was a body of research about how the extension of the school day could make a difference. They have chosen not to focus on that part of the research in the actual trial. So, you know, research informing policy at that point is not really, that's not really happening,
is it?
So research never just provides any answers. It's always ever a raising questions or exploring avenues to enable, you know, people working on the ground to actually do something with it. But, you know, is the research that's being commissioned by Welsh Government and by Welsh Government funded bodies, is it actually asking the right questions?
Good question.
You know, would it not have been better if they intended to do an enrichment activities trial to actually commission some research about, I mean, I know that the trial was the research itself as well.
Well, this is a bit of a trend, isn't it? Because you go back to the debacle of the first set of GCSEs during COVID 2022 and they did the research following that. I'm sure they weren't asking the right questions in that either.
No.
So it seems to be a bit of a, you know, let's make sure we're asking the right questions. What do we really want to find out?
Yes.
Not let's have these broad brushstrokes and think about what.
Well, what really it makes you wonder then, why are they not asking the right questions? Yeah. Is it that they don't know which questions to ask? They don't know what the right questions are. And therefore there is a, and I'm going to
start
say
with
this.
Something.
Yeah. So is there a competence issue within the Welsh Government Education Department, i.e. they don't know what to ask? Or is it that they are quite clear that they know what the right question is, but they're choosing not to? Or are they being encouraged by researchers to actually look at something that, but they've been told, well, no, this is the question that you really need to ask. You know, there's something going wrong in that process between knowing there's a problem and research being commissioned in order to answer
the right research.
So in the kind of I'm just putting my hot water bottle on.
I know, it's sad. It's June and you've got a hot water bottle. I've just got to say, though, today that you have picked this apart in your usual way. And I'm just sitting here because I am in exam mode with a very glazed look on my face today. Yes. But, you know, well-being, we're completely different places.
Well, it has to be said that going and watching The Strong Man, it did make me feel a little bit better. But I was so cold all weekend. Anyway, that's completely by the by. So there is a focus on wellbeing in Welsh Government, and there has been some commissioned research about wellbeing. But before we look at that research and kind of pull it apart, we wanted to just look at what's available out there currently, support resources for wellbeing in schools.
I mean, it is a positive that they have actually recognised that wellbeing needs to be looked at, isn't it?
Yes,
I think,
absolutely.
You know, it's not us, again, coming here having a whinge and pulling things apart, but I think it's been able to see through what is there. And if you listen to our podcast previously when we were talking about sifting through what was actually out there.
Yeah.
Because, again, there's so much out there. How do we know what is the right thing?
Basically, we're the shit filter, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to back again.
So we're doing this with absolutely the best intentions in, at heart, saying, you know, this is our government, for our country, for our children, for our teachers, for our head teachers, for us. Yeah, we want to challenge them to be the best they possibly can. So we want to share the information with them that we think will make the difference and be able to make a difference to the learners, but also the people working in education. So looking at the wellbeing resources that are currently out there, and there are a lot, and they are easy to find. And all you've got to do is, you know, supporting staff wellbeing, mentally healthy schools. There's some really good sets of resources and clear guidance and, you know, steps. And there's the education support network, which, you know, has got a helpline. Yeah. I've actually used it myself a long time ago now, but I was dealing with staffing issues in a school that I worked in, and it was helpful. A real problem. And it was incredibly helpful. But what's also interesting in all of the resources, and we have been and looked through a lot of them, is that they all focus on staff. And I know that this has been an issue that head teachers have raised, is that they're the ones providing the wellbeing as opposed to being the ones there being supported. There was a paper that was commissioned by the National Association of Educational Leadership by Dr. Ali James, titled "More Than a Sticking Plaster: Understanding the Demands and Identifying the Resources to Create Sustainable Senior Leadership in Welsh Education." So a very promising headline. And this was all based on the concept of compassionate leadership. And compassionate leadership is something that's been used in the health service in order to support leaders and the leadership process in the health service to be more compassionate, to be more empathetic, to understand what it is that people are going through and address that. So there were three, this particular paper gathered information about what's going on for leaders in Wales, and there were three sources of information. There was a wellbeing survey that was shared by the NAEL, there were focus groups with head teachers, and then there was also a questionnaire with for head teachers who've recently left the profession, because they felt that that was a really good source of information. And my next bullet point just says, bear with us, bear with us, because this is, this particular paper seemed to kind of characterize a lot of how research is being used for policy in Wales at the moment. And I want to quote here, a couple of things that were in the executive summary that outline what this paper was about, and I'm quoting: "Identifies the resources they need to help manage help balance the huge demands head teachers face." So the paper was absolutely focused on identifying how they could balance demands and resources, how they could make sure that the demands didn't overwhelm the resources and there were enough resources there in terms of time and training and resources and what have you to help with it. But it also said, using insights from research and theory and conversations with head teachers, the paper has identified the difficulties that head teachers face, including overwhelming work demands, excessive scrutiny of outcomes, sclerotic bureaucracy, competing agendas of multiple overseers, high levels of emotional demands, and resource shortages. So that little quote there is bookended by the two things that are kind of the big issues, is that this overwhelming work demands and resource shortages. Yes.
With everything else in between.
Yes. And a final quote: "The report also therefore makes clear what the solutions are."
Hurrah.
Yay. So this paper in the executive summary, and this was actually in the forward as well.
We'll put the link in the show notes.
We will. That this report quite clearly states that's going to make clear what the solutions are to head teacher wellbeing. Okay, fantastic, great.
Read on.
But it does say later on in the paper, which I think is interesting, you know, it's how a paper is introduced and what is actually in the paper. Yeah. Later on in the paper, it says the recommendations will need to take into account what is already being used and then measured for impact. So it doesn't seem to have taken into account
what already is in place, is it?
Yeah. No, no. So it's kind of like, that's the kind of get out clause for saying, well, look, we may be suggesting stuff that's already out there. Yeah. So just bear that in mind. Okay. So we had, going to my next, we got,
oh, you're so organized, Lynn.
14 pieces of paper to look at today.
You're very organized.
So about this, not about everything. Okay. So we've got the, what was really interesting in this paper was that the Dr. Ali James had organized the paper and organized the responses that she got from head teachers into four key themes.
Can I ask, do you remember how big the sample was of the survey?
I don't offhand. We'll I think it was quite small.
Yeah.
I think it was 106, something like that.
It's not lot, is
it? No, it's not. But you know, it's about it's about 10%. So it's within, because this paper was peer reviewed. So it's, although it's a small study, I think it was within
just within the range.
Within the range, but also the fact that there were, it was coming from three sources as well. Okay. So, but there were four themes of head teacher, and it was specifically focusing on head teacher well-being. There was like the focus of the demands. So there was things to do with performance, which included the impact of overwhelming workload, perception of excessive scrutiny on outcomes, sense of purpose diminished by bureaucracy. Then there was organizational. So that included the desire for culture shift, headteachers having many masters, feeling that learning and development was stifled, the lack of awareness of role of headteachers. Then there was psychological, that the senior leaders were seen as the figurehead and the emotional load of that. You know, it's a very lonely job.
It is very,
very lonely job. And there's enormous pressure on that job, not just within the school, but, you know, outside, well, parents,
from, press. It's from below, above.
Yeah, I mean, just around, look at, you know, the news recently about, the racist attacks. Okay. And then there was social theme. So this is the unrealistic expectations of society, limited resources, and embracing opportunity and celebrating good practice. Now, what the paper had done was they had taken each of these four themes, they looked at the threads within each of these themes, and then they'd addressed solutions against each of these threads. But what they seemed to be doing was they seemed to be saying, right, here's a theme, here's an issue, let's look at the research for this specific issue. Where else is this particular issue being addressed, and how was it addressed? Right, now here's a solution. But each time
they went, isn't it?
This is it. Each time they went through that process, they went theme, issue, research, solution. It was all being done in isolation. So each of those themes being addressed, which is why when you look at the solutions that they were suggesting for each of these, you can see why they got what they got. So what I did was I went back and I said, right, well, rather than looking at it under these four themes, because it was very difficult to make sense of what was going on. It was, you know, it was very difficult to kind of pull through and go, yeah, but what are they actually suggesting is going to happen? What's that going to look like? What I did was I went through and I put them under four practical headlines: new support, new resources, new communication or ways of organizing things, and new responsibilities. So let's look at what new support they suggested should be available to head teachers in order to deal with head teachers' well-being. Should we just go through a few of those?
We could. Well, I think the first one is an interesting one as well, because it's specialist consultancy for SLT to support that team cohesion. And you've also got the development and pre-crisis conflict management.
Okay.
That's a mouthful.
I mean, we have experienced, I'm trying to make sense, we have experienced going into schools where the senior leadership team obviously aren't all on the same page, or there's issues in the senior leadership team, or, but it's quite few and far between, isn't it? It's and, you know, that is a very difficult position, but that feels very, very specific, doesn't it?
Yeah,
very specific. Okay, but there was also this, and I think this does make a difference, this triad, and they're using the term supervision sessions for head teachers to share ideas and process difficult issues. That's always helpful, isn't it?
And I know we talked about, well, we talked about supervision in our, when we had a discussion in our podcast that's coming out
next week,
and that's not really quite what the word supervision.
No, supervision is a term that's used in psychology. It's used in counselling. It's when you go to a counsellor and you talk about your problems with the counsellor. The counsellor themselves then go to what's called supervision, and they talk through what's happened in their counselling. So it's as though education is borrowing terminology from the health sector, but not using it in quite the same way. And you know, triads, they've been used for professional development for many, many years. But it's always, I remember being part of a triad, and it was always an additional expectation, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, these all seem to be in addition to what teachers are doing and
consulting are doing. So active and accessible CPD programs which meet people's need for safety. So making sure that the CPD that is out there is active and accessible. And that it keeps people safe whilst they're doing it. Yes, very important. Yeah. Absolutely.
They also mentioned the headteacher's mentorship and coaching program. And I know there's lots going on around that at the moment. So again, this is one of the things that's not recognising what is actually in place.
So being able to talk about what you're going through and getting an opportunity to talk to peers or to talk to experts about what that looks like in solving that. Obviously, all those things are really, really useful. This next one, compassionate leaders training program to include skills training on having difficult conversations with staff, supporting techniques for leaders to show compassion to their staff. So head teachers to be provided with training on how to be a compassionate leader.
It's a little bit, I would find that a little bit insulting myself.
Well, also it's kind of like, isn't that saying to the head teachers, oh, you're not feeling great? Yeah. Oh, well, you need to be better for your staff.
Yeah. But it's, you need a bit more compassion.
Well, how about the compassionate leaders for the people who lead head teachers? Okay, there's also dedicated and protected time to regularly work on issues related to well-being. Can I just say, if that time is dedicated and protected and you can't use it for other stuff, is that mandating well-being?
Yeah, it is.
So if I've got a phone call,
I need PPA for head teachers, isn't it, on wellbeing.
So if I've got a phone call, I need to make about a safeguarding issue for a pupil to, you know, to their parents or whatever it happens to be. No. I have to. It's dedicated and protected. Therefore, I have to go and do my wellbeing instead.
But
it just seems, I don't know. It just seems doesn't.
But also, is practical. That issues related to wellbeing for your staff? Or is it your own well-being?
I think it was actually head teacher's well-being. Yeah. It's saying, well, okay, so Monday, 2 o'clock for an hour, you have to do something on your well-being.
Well, what do you drop to prioritise
exactly
to get that done?
Exactly that. Okay, and the last thing that was identified, and I scoured this page to pull out these solutions, psychological therapy for those at crisis point.
What can you say about that?
Well, it should be a right. It should be a right, not something that's being offered as a solution now. But yeah, if you're at a crisis point, absolutely you should have psychological therapy. But is that really going to solve
it? It shouldn't get to crisis point in the first place.
No, it shouldn't. Okay. So a lot of these things in terms of support will require additional time to do them.
Yeah. Well, they all do, don't they?
Yeah, actually, yeah, you're right. Looking at them, yeah, they all do. Okay, so new resources. Okay, there was this, use the responsibility and accountability matrix within SLT to ensure effective distribution of tasks and demands. Now, I looked it up, the responsibility and accountability matrix. Basically, it's a list of questions to say, you know, do you need to do this, or is it more appropriate for someone else to do this? You know, who has responsibility for this? It's kind of a checklist, and you know, it is obviously a useful tool, but you'd probably have to have training on how to use it. You'd probably have to recognize, you know, you'd have to know it was being used effectively before using it. And it does feel a little bit kind of okay. This whole thing feels a little bit, well, look, head teachers, you're taking on too much
And it's your fault that you're taking on too much. So we're going to give you a tool, and you're going to need to use this tool to highlight to you that you need to delegate more. And it feels a little bit like the onus has been placed on the head teacher to be better at their job, so their well-being will be better.
The head teacher's got to be more proactive. That's what's implying.
Yeah. You're just not working in the right way, and that's why your health well-being is suffering.
It's not system.
Okay. Not to be at all cynical. Okay. No. So the next new resource was good practice case studies shared online.
Well, we do have lots of different good practice case studies for lots of different things shared online.
Yeah,
it begs the question, how useful?
I feel like, as well, you know, if I've got a problem in my school and I feel like I'm going under and I feel like I'm really struggling, and surely I would have already looked online I would be talking to a friend, or I would be, I mean, okay, there are some people who probably would keep it inside, who might not naturally do those things, but it does feel a little bit like, you know, you're thinking of leaving, becoming a head teacher. Please read these case studies first. Anyway, health and wellbeing support to be provided through, and I think it was through collaborative working with businesses.
I quite like this one.
Yes, okay. So things like to be provided for head teachers, things like workshops, meditation sessions, yoga or fitness sessions, psychoeducation groups, psychological consultation as a protective resource. Remind me, I thought head teachers were adults, that they could book their own yoga sessions.
Yeah. I can see more clamoring for this one.
Oh, you know. Okay. It just begs the question. I know that the researcher behind this paper, Dr. Ali James, is a clinical consultant psychologist, but how much experience or how much emphasis has been placed on this person's understanding of the situation and understanding of, you know, how desperate it is for some head teachers and so on.
But these aren't addressing the root cause of why we're in the situation as it is, isn't it?
No, and I think, I mean, we could go through, let's just finish off all of them. Let's just list them all so that you know what's in this paper, so you don't actually have to go and wade through it all yourself. The new communication or organisation of thing. Ensure messaging around tasks that head teachers need to carry out outlines the underlying purpose and vision of the demand to avoid misunderstanding. I really, really dislike this one.
But I also think with everything, I think, and we've talked about this in the past, there is sometimes over-communication. There is too much communication going on. We're just going to put another layer.
Yeah.
Let's make sure that we put our shit filter back on. Let's just make sure.
Do they need to know this?
Yeah, what we need to know.
Yeah.
Let's just make sure the essentials.
Yes.
Without all the other gump that goes around it.
Yes. Like when they put the COVID operational guidelines out, just say, tell us what's changed.
Yeah. Not replace it and then guess which bits in a slightly different place.
Yeah. So, you know, ensure messaging to avoid misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Well, why are they misunderstanding? Let's pull people out of the bottom of the river. Let's go back up to the top of the river, see why they're falling in. Why is the misunderstanding happening? Is it possibly because they're overworked and they haven't got time to read things properly?
Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know. So make sure the expectations and task responsibility on head teachers and the middle tier are clearly defined. Coordinate and streamline middle tier demands so that there is a shared purpose and vision. Makes sense, absolutely. Make sure that everything is complementing each other. But I know that we've had this particular thing said to us before, is that, well, responding to the demands of the impact of COVID-19 and curriculum reform, they're one and the same thing.
Yeah.
We know they're not. They're not. You know, they may need to be dovetailed, but they are not the same thing. And it's not. You can coordinate, you can streamline, it will make a difference. And obviously, lots of small changes lead up to one big change. But there's just this feeling of the onus being on the head teacher, that a lot of these solutions require additional resources and time and expertise and
just there are things, more things for head teachers to do.
But also this, we've had this conversation about, you know, data or things that have to be done for the middle tier.
Yeah.
And what impact, what difference is that making to the school?
Yeah.
Is that improving standards?
Yeah.
Is it improving what's going on in the school? Maybe, maybe not. And it's having that conversation about, well, knowing why the middle tier might want some of that information or why they want that particular.
Yeah. And surely that's for the middle tier to say, is what we're doing helping or hindering schools?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's hindering schools, if they're doing something that is not making a direct impact on the learning in the classroom, should we actually be doing it? And finally, there, the developing a definition of wellbeing to use as a measure of impact of interventions via an annual staff survey. So, yes, of course, that's very sensible that, you know, having some kind of measurement of is this working?
But let's not do the staff survey on the very last day of the school year.
No,
everyone's really tired.
No, let's not. OK, so the final new set of new stuff was these new responsibilities and the fact that they are suggesting in teacher wellbeing, where the first thing they talk about is an overwhelming workload demand. They're actually suggesting some new responsibilities. Yeah. I think that's quite interesting. So head teachers should participate in middle tier strategy development.
Well, we know that takes place in certain middle tiers.
Yes.
In certain aspects.
Of certain middle tier already have an advisory board.
Yeah. So I'm assuming the other.
Yeah.
Ones but do it as
would,
well.
That kind of thing would require additional time.
It is additional time.
Meetings.
Yeah.
Okay. The triad supervision session for head teachers to share ideas and process difficult issues. We've mentioned before, it's new support, but it's also a new responsibility, as is the mentoring and coaching program, as is the training program, and the dedicated and protected time to regularly work on issues. So yeah, there's an awful lot. And I think it's really interesting that using insights from research is important to create policy, but that research needs to work. That research needs to needs to ask the right question. So rather, I feel that this research has said, how could compassionate leadership support head teachers? What the forward was suggesting was that this research was going to address the issue of whether there were solutions that were available to improve the well-being of head teachers. And they seem to be two slightly different questions. But if we're in a situation where Welsh government are saying, we've got a problem, we've got an issue with head teacher well-being, so let's commission some research through one of our publicly funded bodies in order to address this. And this research has said we will identify solutions for this problem. And then it comes up with more workload for head teachers.
And that becomes policy.
And that becomes policy. We're in trouble.
Yeah.
We're really in trouble. This themed approach. It's not that the research itself wasn't good. The research itself was good. Mm. It was peer reviewed. It was structured. It was, you know, well referenced. It was just the wrong research.
I think the next stage to this, though, is I keep going back to our podcast that we've got coming up next week. And we're talking to Dr. Hayley Lewis.
Yes.
And I think that's a really interesting point to take this on one step further.
Yeah.
Because we're looking at all of this coming out here is the onus is on the head teacher.
Yeah.
But I think our conversation where this is going next week shines a light really on possible ways forward.
Yeah.
So it's not just focused on head teachers. It's about the whole systematic change.
Well, this is it. You can't turn around to somebody who's currently going through a state of anxiety and depression, let's say, and just say, well, look, you've just got to, we'll put you on a course and you just do the course.
Do a bit of yoga on a Friday afternoon.
It's got to be in a support, and you've got to understand that there are things that person needs to stop doing as well as things that they need to actually do. And I think that's the key, is thinking about, these are not people who are looking at things in the wrong way all the time. That there are people who are struggling with the demands of the system and not having enough resources to address those demands.
Well, that's
demands.
Quite the interesting part of this as well, isn't it? It's about all identifying new things and additional things for head teachers and SLT to be doing. But where is that about which are the bits you need to stop
doing? Well, we go back to, you know, the reflection on teaching and learning. I mean, Dylan William quite clearly states that it's school improvement is about stopping doing good things so that you can do even better things.
Yeah, and that is missing.
Yeah, so we're in a situation and we fully recognize that there is no easy solution to this, that this is a really difficult situation where we've got a significant challenge for head teachers, but we've already been through a life-changing challenge. So we need to recognize that human capacity has a limit. And that if we are just trying to add to that capacity with more and more things, people will break. You know, people have broken, people have left. And recognizing that those who have left for a reason, and that is overwhelming workload demands. Yeah.
I mean, and long gone are the days where, you know, particularly in secondary, where you had non-contact time, that you could spend that non-contact time in the staff room.
Yes.
I mean, I can remember when I started teaching,
mandated wellbeing time, sorry.
but that's the situation that it was when you had a non-contact. It was seen as a free.
Yes.
Not you don't get
a cup of coffee, you'd have a really good
chat.
But
that's the difference now, isn't it? They're not called frees anymore. No. They're called non-contacts.
Yeah.
Which has got a completely different feel to it. And I think that's the well-being side of it that, you know.
Well, it feels like everything's becoming very, very rigid, very centralized, very structured. And it's saying, you know, if you're gonna have
Don't get me started on a Friday lunchtime down the pub.
Oh well, yes.
That, you know.
That was an essential part of my working week. But if we're going to start having this dedicated and protected time to regularly work on issues related to wellbeing, you know, if my issue relating to wellbeing is I just need to have a chat with my mate over a coffee and a cake, is that going to be deemed as okay?
And then you're sorted.
Well, okay. So, I mean, the bottom line here is our government using research papers as a potential shortcut to getting things done? And, you know, are all these policies that are coming out
tick that one off
we've getting things rather than creating policy that actually has results?
Let's look at it, let's think about what can be dropped and let's think about what can be done better.
So if you're interested in this issue, as we are, and feel that it's really important, do keep listening to our podcast. But we've also got the Creating Resilient Learners webinar that's currently on Impact Plus. So if you want to know more about what resilience actually looks like, it's well worth going and having a look at that and seeing what that is all about. I mean, obviously that's not the issue that we're talking about today.
Let's talk about resilient learners in the classroom, isn't it?
Yes.
But there's some things that you can think about, isn't there?
Yeah. Okay, so we've got
final half term of the summer term.
Yes.
We're starting today as we're recording this. So we've got lots on again. Got carrying on this week with our school and cluster work on assessment
which is very exciting, very interesting as well. We're busy with our collaboration on a book with Bruce Robertson,
which is really exciting, really. So hopefully we'll have some
it's coming some towards the end of that kind of the first stage of development.
Let's hope now in the next couple of months that we'll have something out on Twitter particularly
that
you can see what's going on. So
okay, and we've got lots of sketchnote contracts and resources. There's a big resource coming for a particular part of Wales, which hopefully we'll be able to tell you more about as that gets sorted. Bilingual as well, which will be awesome.
Yes, we just finished the Welsh sketch notes, Welsh versions of those.
Yes.
So I've got a bit cross-eyed on it.
it's our birthday soon.
Yes,
yay. In just over a month. It's our birthday, 7 years.
Seven, lucky old seven.
Yeah, so, and we are running a podcast competition. So if you would like to be in with a chance of winning professional membership for a whole year, so I'll give you access to everything on Impact Plus for a whole year, all you need to do is to send us a photo of where you listen to our podcast.
It's that simple.
It is that simple. We'd love to see where you listen. Is it in the garden? Is it in the car? Is it on your walks with your dog? Where is it?
We all ones in the bath. we'll avoid those ones. Yeah. But no, out walking the dog, great.
Yeah, yeah. Send us a
but the quirkiest, the best.
Absolutely. So
and that's by the 9th of July.
July. Yeah. So you've got a little time for that. Yeah. But yeah.
Send them about in.
It. Absolutely. So we will see you again next time.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to make sure you don't miss future episodes. You can find us online at www.impact.wales. You can also follow us on social media. On Twitter, we're at Impact Wales. On Facebook and Instagram, search for Impact Wales. And on LinkedIn, search for Impact School Improvement.